We invite then your attention to Brother Philip Taylor as he speaks to us upon the subject, upon Aaron's forehead.
Throughout the scriptures, my dear brethren and sisters, ever since man first sinned, those who would seek redemption from sin and death have been called upon to render holiness to Yahweh. And this, of course, involves living a life of holiness oneself, but it is a holiness which is centered upon Yahweh. Now, the word holiness, as no doubt we are all aware, involves the concept of separation. It's a theme which is found throughout the scriptures. It is a theme which is very frequently and quite correctly stressed and emphasized from our platforms. We all know, do we not, by our experience when we go out and mix in this world, which we have to do, we all know how easy it is to forget our separation and to return to those things which we left behind. And yet, separation of itself is insufficient. For not only must we be separated from the world, we must be separated to the right things. We must be separated to the things of Yahweh. Now, in biblical times, there were many people who lived a life of separation, but that was separation to their various pagan deities. During the last 2,000 years, many people have shut themselves up in monasteries and convents and kept themselves separate in that way. Their separation has indeed been very severe. It has been rigorously maintained. But they would have been better to have mixed with the world because they were not separate or holy to Yahweh. The word holiness, from the Hebrew word kodesh, has as its root the meaning of cleanliness. It is something which is holy because it is first clean and it is pure. The separation of monks and nuns is by no means clean. It is polluted, as we know, by the filth of the apostasy, and so is worse than useless. And so this evening we are concerned not so much with holiness as such, but with holiness to Yahweh. Because it is the things of Yahweh which are clean and pure. They are the only things which are truly clean and pure. And it is to be cleansed from our nature, that nature of sin that we seek, is it not? The expression holiness to Yahweh, Kodesh Yahweh in the original, occurs, as far as we can see, only 18 times in scripture, including one occasion it is rendered holy to Yahweh and once consecrated to Yahweh. The word Kodesh by itself appears many times. The word Kadesh, similar word, also appears many times, but this expression Kodesh Yahweh, which we want to concentrate our minds on this evening, occurs, as we can see, about 18 times. And the first occasion is in that chapter which we read together, the 28th chapter of the book of Exodus. Very appropriately, it begins with the head. In this 28th chapter, we read, did we not, of the high priest's garments, of all of his garments, leading up finally to his mitre, or better rendered, turban, which we read in verse 36. Exodus 28 and verse 36. And thou shalt make a plate of pure gold, engrave upon it, like the engravings of a signet, holiness to Yahweh. And thou shalt put it on a blue lace, that it may be upon the mitre, upon the forefront of the mitre it shall be. So these words then were engraved upon a plate of pure gold, which was to be set upon Aaron's forehead. If we just briefly go over to chapter 39, the plate is further described. Here we have the actual manufacture of these things. Exodus 39 and verse 30. And they made the plate of the holy crown of pure gold, and wrote upon it a writing like to the engravings of a signet, Holiness to Yahweh. So there it isn't just a plate, it is a plate of the holy crown of pure gold. So I wish for a few moments to consider this headdress of the high priest, for that will teach us much of what is involved in this holiness to Yahweh. First, we observe that this particular garment is upon Aaron's forehead. It is upon the seat of his conscious thought. And now the head of the body to which we belong is, of course, Jesus Christ, he who is our high priest. And we know that throughout his life on earth before, he manifested holiness to Yahweh to perfection. He came, as we read, to do the will of his Father. His life was one of complete cleanliness. He completely purged from himself that nature of sin which he inherited. And we, brethren and sisters, as members of his body, must do likewise to the best of our ability. We must then fill our minds with the same principles with which he filled his minds. If we go to the epistle to the Philippians in the 4th chapter, the apostle describes for us the things which ought to fill our minds. Fill them indeed to the exclusion of anything else, if we possibly could attain unto it. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, clean in other words, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Yes, indeed, these thoughts are clean, therefore they are holy, and we obtain them from one source only. We obtain them from the Word, do we not? Now, going back to the high priest of Israel, the words were engraved upon the plate of gold. They weren't just written there in a way which could be erased or altered. Now, when a writing is engraved, it becomes permanent, does it not? And so we need to study the Word regularly. Allow the Word to make a permanent impression upon our mind, something which will never afterwards be removed. If we do that, of course, then that permanent impression will continue to be permanent into the millennial age and indeed beyond. Moreover, it is engraved as a signet, and so it identifies us, does it not, with Yahweh. If we have it as our signet, it is as a mark of identification. As we said earlier, that mere separation or holiness was not of itself enough. It must be holiness to Yahweh, to that name which each one of us took at our baptism. For then we were baptized, were we not, into the name of the Father, into the name of the Son, into the name of the Holy Spirit. It became our signet, as it were, at that time, our signature, our family name. And so it is engraved as a signet. Now the plate and the crown upon which it is engraved is also of very great interest. Because the word which is translated crown doesn't mean a circlet placed upon the head of a king. It's a totally different word. The Hebrew word is netzer, from which we get the word Nazarite, one who was for himself separated to a life of service to Yahweh, either for a period of time, if he so decided, or in the case of those mentioned in Scripture, for their life. Nazarites for life, for their life, separated a service to Yahweh, and so the holiness, this holiness was also upon them. But it was a plate of a crown, and the plate also is interesting. That is the Hebrew word tzitz, And it is more frequently translated as flower or blossom. If we go to Numbers chapter 17, we find this word used again in connection with the high priest. We recall the incident, no doubt, time of the rebellion of Korah, Dathan and Abiram, where they challenged the position of Moses and Aaron. And after judgment had come upon them, the position of Aaron continued to be challenged. And so Yahweh commanded that a rod should be taken by each of the princes of the tribes, and they should be laid up. Numbers chapter 17 and verse 2. Speak unto the children of Israel, and take of every one of them a rod according to the house of their fathers, of all their princes, according to the house of their fathers, 12 rods. Write thou every man's name upon his rod. And thou shalt write Aaron's name upon the rod of Levi, for one rod shall be for the head of the house of their fathers. And thou shalt lay them up in the tabernacle of the congregation before the testimony, where I will meet with you. And it shall come to pass that the man's rod, whom I shall choose, shall blossom. And I will make to cease from me the murmurings of the children of Israel, whereby they murmur against you. Verse 8. It came to pass that on the morrow Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi was budded, and brought forth buds, and bloomed blossoms, and yielded almonds. And here it is the word blossom, which is from this same Hebrew word tzitz, that which was found for the plate of the crown of the high priest. It was an almond blossom. And because the almond is the first blossom to appear in the year in Israel, it is a type of resurrection. The word translated almond means the awakening one. And so we would suggest, brethren and sisters, that the shape of this plate was in the shape of an almond blossom, something which would have symbolized the resurrection, which those who have manifested holiness to Yahweh in their lives hope to receive, and then to be justified through their faith when they stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And so it is fitting, is it not, that this plate should be of the pure gold of faith. Faith in the word, as seen in the lace of blue, and in which it is attached to the linen turban, which represents the righteousness of Christ. So in this headdress of the high priest, then, we see the principles, do we not? The main principles of this holiness to Yahweh, which the high priest was called upon to bear, and which must, of course, apply to all Israel. Now going back to Exodus chapter 28, we continue to verse 38, where we are told of the reason why this had to be upon Aaron's forehead. Exodus 28 and verse 38. And it shall be upon Aaron's forehead, that Aaron may bear the iniquity of the holy things which the children of Israel shall hallow in all their holy gifts, and it shall be always upon his forehead, that they may be accepted before Yahweh. Now it seems at first a strange expression, does it not? The iniquity of the holy things. Holy things surely are clean things. How then can these holy things have iniquity attached to them? Now these things are the holy gifts of the children of Israel. They were the offerings of the people which they consecrated to Yahweh, the things which they had hallowed from their possessions. But the children of Israel were a sinful people, and so it was that the things which they offered were defiled with the iniquity of the offerers. And it was only through the mediatorship of the high priest that they could be cleansed. And the high priest could not do this of himself, but only through the principles of holiness to Yahweh that his office became efficacious. We, brethren and sisters, we offer ourselves, do we not, to Yahweh in service in this life. But we also are men and women of flesh. And so those things from us can only be accepted when it is through the name of our Lord and Master Jesus Christ. And because of this principle that the high priest had always to wear the crown upon his forehead. For then, and then only, would the gifts be acceptable before Yahweh. But also, of course, remind the high priest himself that his thoughts must be also directed to those things to which we have already referred. There would be no use for a high priest to wear this plate of gold upon his head and to act in a way quite different. Regrettably, so many of the high priests in Israel did, as we know. They did not live up to those words which were placed upon their forehead. And as a result of that, Israel were dispersed throughout the nations. But a faithful high priest, he would have kept in mind the things which were placed upon his mind. And he would have done his best to freed his mind from the mental processes of sin. We go to the 13th chapter of the book of Leviticus. We have a contrast to what was on the forehead of the high priest. Here, Leviticus chapter 13, we have the case of the leper. Leviticus 13 and verse 42. And if there be in the bald head or bald forehead a white reddish sore, it is a leprosy sprung up in his bald head or his bald forehead. Then the priest shall look upon it. Behold, if the rising of the sore be white reddish in his bald head or in his bald forehead, as the leprosy appeareth in the skin of the flesh, he is a leprous man. He is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him utterly unclean. His plague is in his head. Here, brethren and sisters, is the very worst form of leprosy. It is leprosy in the head. Leprosy, as we know, is a type of sin. And when sin takes control of the mental processes, brethren and sisters, all hope is gone. The leper is described as utterly unclean. He is completely unclean beyond recall. All of us, as we know, from time to time, we sin because of the weakness of our flesh. But once that gets control of us and our mental processes and guides our thoughts, then our actions will follow in the same direction and our position will be hopeless. And in the second book of Chronicles, in chapter 26, we have the case of Uzziah, the king of Judah, who presumed to do the office of a high priest as well as king. Something for which he had not been called. 2 Chronicles 26 and verse 16. Referring to this king, Uzziah. But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. For he transgressed against Yahweh his God and went into the temple of Yahweh to burn incense upon the altar of incense. And Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him 80 priests of Yahweh that were valiant men. And they withstood Uzziah the king, and said unto him, It appertaineth not unto thee, Uzziah, to burn incense unto Yahweh, but to the priests, the sons of Aaron, that are consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for thou hast transgressed, neither shall it be for thine honour from Yahweh Elohim. Then Uzziah was wroth, and had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was wroth with the priests, the leprosy even rose up in his forehead before the priests in the house of Yahweh, from beside the incense altar. So here in this incident, brethren and sisters, we have two men. Both, in fact, are called Azariah, as Azariah is in fact named in the book of Kings. Azariah means Yah has helped. Azariah means Yah is strong. But when the king had been helped, and when the king became strong, we read that his heart was lifted up in pride. His mental processes became defiled by sin. So in this incident, we have one man bearing upon his forehead holiness to Yahweh. And he was valiantly trying to preserve that holiness in the sanctuary. But the other man became leprous in his forehead, and he was cut off from the house of Yahweh for the rest of his life. Now, the high priest was, of course, the head of the legal system in Israel. It was through him, and it was through him alone, that approach could be made to Yahweh. And it was upon his head that the principles of holiness to Yahweh were to be found. And our high priest, Jesus Christ, he is the head of the Ecclesia, Israel after the Spirit. And in his head were found the same principles. He banished completely from his mind all sinful thoughts. Because these principles are found at the head of the law, it follows, does it not, that they must permeate all the law. Because this was expressed in the headdress of the high priest, the same principles of holiness would have affected the whole of his garments. It isn't expressed regarding the other garments, but it follows as a matter of course, does it not? What is in the head must follow through the rest of the body. And so likewise it must have flown out from there into the whole nation of Israel. And so the whole of the law of Moses was designed to emphasize holiness to Yahweh, that those principles might be manifest in the nation. Nevertheless, there are five further aspects of the law in connection with this, which this principle is stressed. And it must be by way of emphasis, because as we have said, by definition, the whole of the law was holiness to Yahweh. So have a look at these other five. The first is in Exodus chapter 31, and it concerns a matter which predated the law of Moses. In fact, it went right back to creation. Exodus 31 verse 12. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, Speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbaths ye shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that ye may know that I am Yahweh that doth sanctify you. Ye shall keep the Sabbath therefore, for it is holy unto you. Every one that defileth it shall surely be put to death. Whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest. Holiness it should be rendered, holiness to Yahweh. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days Yahweh made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. So the Sabbath then is particularly stressed as being holiness to Yahweh. The Sabbath was a sign to Israel that they may know that Yahweh had sanctified them or made them holy. And a sign is something of which they should take notice. No doubt it was something which marked Israel out as being different from the other nations. The idea that one day in seven they should refrain from their normal occupations. It was a Sabbath of rest, notice it is described. But literally in the original it is a Sabbath of Sabbatism. It is a rest for the purpose of resting. The idea is clearly that of completely resting from the things of the world, resting from them to the extent of not even letting them enter the mind. Not that the mind was to be empty. On the contrary, their minds should on that day have dwelt entirely upon those things which constituted holiness to Yahweh. They should remember first the work of creation, that the world was created, that it should be full of the glory of Yahweh. They should remember their own separation, that they had been called out of Egypt to be a holy people unto Yahweh. And proper use of the Sabbath of rest would prepare the people for the week to come, that in their daily lives they could manifest that holiness. Now for us, the first day of the week does not, as we know, take the place of the Sabbath to Israel. But some of the principles are with us, are they not, as we take our place at the table of memorial, which is a sign to us of our deliverance and our separation, that we likewise might prepare our minds for the great millennial Sabbath which is coming upon the earth. A time when we should remove from our minds all the thoughts of the world. Something which most of us, we will readily admit, find very difficult to do. If we go to Amos chapter 8, there we are given the contrast again, are we not? This was the attitude of so many in Israel at the time when the high priests forgot what was written upon their forehead. Amos chapter 8 and verse 4. Hear this, O ye that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail, saying, when will the new moon be gone that we may sell corn? And the Sabbath, that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit, that we may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes, yea, and sell the refuse of the wheat. Here there is no holiness to Yahweh. Rather has the leprosy of sin taken firm hold of those people. But we, of course, brethren and sisters, should fill our minds with these things every day of the week, in order that we may reflect holiness to Yahweh in our lives. Leviticus chapter 23 gives us our next example from the law. And here our consideration is taken to the Feast of Weeks. Many feasts which Israel kept during their year, but only this one. Only in connection with this one do we read of holiness to Yahweh. Leviticus 23 and verse 15. And ye shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that ye brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath shall ye number 50 days, and ye shall offer a new meal offering unto Yahweh. Ye shall bring out of your habitations 2 wave loaves of 2/10 deals. They shall be of fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits unto Yahweh. And ye shall offer with the bread 7 lambs without blemish of the first year, and 1 young bullock and 2 rams. They shall be for a burnt offering unto Yahweh, with their meal offering and their drink offerings, even an offering made by fire, a sweet savour unto Yahweh. Then ye shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats for a sin offering, and 2 lambs of the first year for a sacrifice of peace offerings. And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits for a wave offering before Yahweh, with the 2 lambs. They shall be holiness to Yahweh for the priest. Again, holy should be better rendered holiness. Now this feast is of course that which is styled in the 2nd chapter of Acts, the day of Pentecost. It was the day on which the apostles first preached the gospel, and the ecclesia was enlarged from that 120 which had previously met together. And as we read through Leviticus chapter 23, we see that immediately following the Passover, the sheaf of the first fruits was presented to the priest. And that was done on the day that Jesus rose from the dead. He was the first fruits from the dead. He lived a life in which he conquered sin. Consequently, a meal offering was presented without leaven. But we have noticed, as we read through that passage in the Feast of Weeks, which also represented first fruits, this was the wheat harvest, whereas the previous one was the barley harvest, that the meal offering on this occasion was baked with leaven. And we may ask, why should leaven have been included on this occasion? It was because those who constituted the first fruits of the ecclesia on the day of Pentecost were sinners. Repentant sinners, certainly, but sinners nonetheless, as the members of the ecclesia ever since have been. But they were sinners who had resolved henceforth to overcome sin, had resolved to live thereafter a life of holiness to Yahweh. Consequently, the bread of the first fruits and the various animal sacrifices are here described as holiness to Yahweh. They are, we notice, a wave offering. This indicates activity. And so the holiness is to be manifested by the ecclesia in its actions. It's not just a question of study and meditation. That, of course, is the message of the Sabbath, is it not? That was an opportunity for the Israelites to study the word and to meditate upon them. But after the study and meditation has taken place, it must become active. The principles of the truth must mould our actions and our service to Yahweh. We've heard that this offering is described as holiness to Yahweh for the priest. And the priest, of course, partook of the peace offerings. But this surely is our priest, even Jesus Christ. Our life of holiness, brethren and sisters, is for our priest, that we may be living witnesses to his work of sacrifice. That, as it is put in Isaiah 53, he may see his seed, and the pleasure of Yahweh shall prosper in his hand. Now this was 50 days from the sheaf of first fruits. 50 is 5/10, grace brought to completion by the covenant. And so the day of Pentecost revealed grace brought to the whole of spiritual Israel. Our third example is in Leviticus chapter 27, and it's also connected with the number 50. The passage concerns the case of a man sanctifying his possessions. Leviticus 27 and verse 14. And when a man shall sanctify his house to be holy unto Yahweh, then the priest shall estimate it, whether it be good or bad, as the priest shall estimate it, so shall it stand. This would occur when something had happened in a man's life, which caused him to realize the goodness and the mercy of Yahweh to him, and he would feel moved to show his gratitude by passing over some of his possessions for the use of the priests. One of the things he could do was to devote part of his inheritance to the service of Yahweh. And this, of course, is something which each one of us should do. We should recognize that Yahweh has indeed been merciful to us in giving us the hope of life eternal. Nothing can be greater than that. And we are not our own. All that we have belongs to Yahweh. Consequently, we should use all of our possessions in the service of Yahweh. We should not think of things as our own personal possessions. We have been blessed with certain things, that we may use them for the ecclesia. Now, a man in Israel could redeem his possession, in which case the priest should value it, and the redemption, the money which he paid, should be determined according to the year of Jubilee. Verse 17. He sanctify his field from the year of Jubilee, according to thy estimation it shall stand. But if he sanctify his field after the Jubilee, then the priest shall reckon unto him the money according to the years that remain, even unto the year of the Jubilee, and it shall be abated for my estimation. But if he doesn't redeem it, then it shall be for the priest. Verse 21. But the field, when it goeth out in the Jubilee, shall be holy unto Yahweh as a field devoted. The possession thereof shall be the priest's. And so we are brought face to face with 50 again. But this time 50 years, not 50 days. And the Jubilee is, of course, the great year of release. It is typical of the kingdom age when the faithful saints will be released from the bondage of sin and death. And when that time comes, the field or the land, the earth, will be the possession of the priest, even of Jesus Christ. It will be devoted unto him, that it may be filled with the glory of Yahweh. And while the house that is sanctified, the ecclesia, that will receive the completion of the grace of Yahweh. That which started on the day of Pentecost will then be complete in the Jubilee. The prophecy of Joel in the second chapter contains words with which we are all familiar, are we not, to describe the great year of release. Joel chapter 2 and verse 28. It shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions, and also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out my spirit, and I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of Yahweh come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of Yahweh shall be delivered. And it was there that Peter stopped when he quoted those words on the day of Pentecost. That was as far as he could go on that occasion, to show those that called upon the name of Yahweh that they should live a life of holiness to him. They then had the promise of deliverance. But when we move from the day of Pentecost to the year of Jubilee, then we can complete that verse, can we not? For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as Yahweh hath said, and in the remnant whom Yahweh shall call. Now back in Leviticus chapter 27 are the other two references in the law to holiness to Yahweh. They follow the same theme of things given to Yahweh, the sanctification of which, remember, required the high priest to wear that golden crown upon his forehead. For these were the things that were referred to, the things which were the holy gifts of the children of Israel. Leviticus 27, verse 28. Notwithstanding, no devoted thing that a man shall devote unto Yahweh of all that he hath, both of man and of beast and of the field of his possession, shall be sold or redeemed. Every devoted thing is most holy, holiness unto Yahweh. So here it concerns things which were devoted, things which were given absolutely. All right of redemption is given up when a thing was devoted. Depending upon what was devoted, it was either destroyed or it was used exclusively for the service of Yahweh. But if it was again made use of by man for his own use, then he would die. So serious was this matter of things which were devoted. Joshua chapter 6 gives us an example of something which was devoted, an incident which we all know very well. Joshua 6 and verse 17, referring to the conquest of the city of Jericho. And the city, Jericho, Joshua 6 verse 17, and the city shall be accursed. The margin has the word devoted, even it and all that are therein to Yahweh. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. The city of Jericho then was devoted to Yahweh. In this case it was to be utterly destroyed, and it should never have been rebuilt. Other cities of Canaan were commanded to be destroyed because of the idolatry which was practiced therein. But only Jericho was described as being devoted. And this no doubt was because it was the first fruits of the cities of Canaan. It was the first city captured and so was devoted to Yahweh. Verse 18. And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the devoted thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed when ye take of the accursed thing and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble. But all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated. Holiness, see in the margin. Vessels of brass and iron are holiness unto Yahweh. They shall come into the treasury of Yahweh. So the gold, the silver, the brass, all of these things were to come into the treasury of Yahweh to be used in his service. And we know, of course, of what is recorded in the next chapter of the sin of Achan, who took of the devoted things of Jericho. He took of those things which should have been holiness to Yahweh and placed in the treasury. And so he of course died for that sin. And surely, brethren and sisters, this is a lesson to us. For as we said earlier, we and all of our possessions are devoted to Yahweh for his service. And if we should feel that we retain a personal interest in these things, if we should attempt to use them for our own pleasure and things not consecrated to the things of Yahweh, then we also are guilty of the sin of Achan. The words in the first letter which Paul wrote to the Corinthians in the sixth chapter are, we feel, relevant in this connection. First letter to the Corinthians, chapter 6 and verse 19. What? Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, which ye have of God, and ye are not your own? For ye are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. And so all of our thoughts and all of our actions, brethren and sisters, should indeed be devoted to the service of Yahweh. But back once again to Leviticus chapter 27. Here we have the last of these examples to which we wish to refer. Leviticus chapter 27 and verse 30. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is Yahweh's. It is holy unto Yahweh. And if a man will at all redeem aught of his tithes, he shall add thereto the fifth part thereof. And concerning the tithe of the herd or of the flock, even of whatsoever passeth under the rod, the tenth shall be holiness unto Yahweh. He shall not search whether it be good or bad, neither shall he change it. And if he change it at all, then both it and the change thereof shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. And the principle here is exactly the same. For the tithe was a token that the whole that a man possessed was Yahweh's. A man owed his life to Yahweh. It is only of his mercy that we are not destroyed. And therefore all that a man of Israel under the law had belonged to him. And in recognition of that, he gave to the service of Yahweh one tenth of his produce. Now this law differed from the previous two in this chapter, inasmuch as this law was compulsory. A man didn't have to sanctify his house or his lands. He didn't have to devote anything of his possessions to Yahweh. All that was done as a freewill offering. It was, of course, pleasing to Yahweh, acceptable to him when done in the right spirit. But he didn't have to. But he did have to pay his tithes. But the trouble was that having done so, having paid his tithes, and the many we were sure we would have done it in the wrong spirit, grudgingly, as something which they had to do, many would have felt that having paid his tithes, then he had fulfilled his obligations and he could do just what he liked with the rest. It's been suggested by some that brethren and sisters should pay tithes as our contribution to ecclesial collections. But if that practice was followed, surely exactly the same attitude of mind would result. We would tend to think that we had fulfilled our obligation and the remaining 90% was ours to do with as we please. But we have already seen, have we not, that our lives, our possessions, all of them are completely devoted to Yahweh. When we were baptized and came into the household of faith, we relinquished all personal interest in these things. But the principle under the law was the same, whether the things were given voluntarily or by compulsion. Once given, they were holiness to Yahweh. Once they had been handed over to the priests, they were separated from the things of the world and were given to the service of Yahweh. And if we go to Ezra chapter 8, we are shown the great care with which things given to Yahweh have to be preserved. Here Ezra prepared to return to Jerusalem following the decree of Artaxerxes. Ezra chapter 8 and verse 24. Ezra 8 verse 24. Then I separated 12 of the chief of the priests, Sherebiah, Hashabiah, and 10 of their brethren with them, and weighed unto them the silver and the gold and the vessels, even the offering of the house of our God, which the king and his counsellors and his lords and all Israel there present had offered. I even weighed unto their hands 650 talents of silver, and silver vessels and 100 talents, and of gold and 100 talents, also 20 basins of gold, 1,000 drams, and 2 vessels of fine copper, precious as gold. And I said unto them, ye are holiness unto Yahweh. The vessels are holy also, and the silver and the gold are a freewill offering unto Yahweh, God of your fathers. So the priests themselves were now described as holiness to Yahweh. It hadn't been spelt out specifically in the law, except for the high priest, as we've seen. Although, of course, the inference was there. But Ezra made it quite clear in his words to these priests that they were holiness to Yahweh. The vessels also were holiness. They hadn't been given by Israelites, but by the king of Persia. But their origin didn't matter. It was the use for which they were intended that counted. And because of this fact, the priests had to guard them carefully. Verse 29. Watch ye and keep them until ye weigh them before the chief of the priests and the Levites and the chief of the fathers of Israel at Jerusalem in the chambers of the house of Yahweh. So took the priests and the Levites the weight of the silver and the gold and the vessels to bring them to Jerusalem unto the house of our God. So the priests on this occasion were absolutely accountable for those things which were even put into their charge. The weight of the vessels was carefully recorded in verses 26 and 27. And when they arrived at Jerusalem, they had to weigh them again before the priests there and put them in the treasury. And it was their duty to ensure that nothing was lost. If the weight in Jerusalem had been less than the weight before they left Babylon, then the priests would have been accountable for that loss. Now we are not, brothers and sisters, with few exceptions of Israelite origin according to the flesh. but we have all been called to be kings and priests unto Yahweh. And so, each of us, our holiness to Yahweh, we should have those principles written in our forehead, brethren and sisters. And in these days, we have been entrusted with these precious things of Yahweh, the truth contained in his word. And the day will come, soon we believe, when we will stand before our high priest, and we likewise will be accountable for those precious things given into our charge. May it be that nothing shall be missing from that for which we are responsible. And then we shall be granted an entrance into the holiness of that kingdom concerning which we hope to speak in our second address.